Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Jimmy O. Yang is going to hang with us through the news, and good sports is coming as well, so don't go anywhere. First, I'll tell you about LifeLock. Coronavirus sparked an increase in cybercrime complaints to the FBI, like domain name spoofing, PPE vendor scams, scams promising checks, and fake COVID charities. Boy, these people are horrible. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives. Every day, you put your info out on the internet, it's at risk. Cybercriminals keep finding ways to steal your identities, and you could miss certain threats just by monitoring your credit alone. LifeLock is the leader in identity theft protection. You become a victim of identity theft, LifeLock can help you restore your identity easier than you can do on your own. You need to protect yourself. It's 2020. Get the best. Get LifeLock, right, Dawson?
LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number for sale on the dark web. If they detect your info has potentially been compromised, they'll send you an alert and you'll have a dedicated restoration specialist for your case. No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. LifeLock can see threats you might miss on your own. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year by using promo code Adam. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK or head to LifeLock.com. Use promo code Adam for 25% off.
Give me the news with Grant. News with Gino Grad, breaking viral, all those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gino Grad, trouble in the Middle East, celebrity drunk meltdowns. Need news with Gino Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
So if the name Shad Gaspard rings a bell, you might be a WWE fan. Some very sad news about him. There was a report just a day or two ago that he had gone missing when he was at the beach with his son. But it does seem that his body has been found washed up on Venice Beach in California. That happened on Sunday. So two people walking on the beach discovered the body. Officials say it matches his description, 39-year-old. He was there with his 10-year-old son. They got caught in a rip current. It prompted a rescue by the lifeguards. And TMZ reports that Shad told lifeguards, focus on my son, focus on my son, get him to shore. And then he was sort of yanked under the water. Oh. The boy was saved. Police and Coast Guard boats, divers searching. They finally suspended their search. He was best known for his time with the WWE. He and his partner were known as Crime Time. And since departing in 2010 from the WWE, he pursued an acting career. He had roles like Think Like a Man 2, Get Hard, The Game, From Dusk Till Dawn, the series. And he was co-creating a graphic novel, Assassin and Son. And he was found just the other day.
Well, it's got to be brutal for the son, because the son at some point has to go home. You're there, you're doing a math. You know what I mean? When people get separated in an amusement park, like at some point you go, okay, I'm going back to the hotel room. But it's like they'll find dad eventually. He's wandering around somewhere. When you're in the ocean and you've been on the shore and no one can see your dad, and it's been an hour and it's time to head back, that's got to be a horrible feeling. Also, were lifeguards on duty? Because I know you said the lifeguard pulled them out, but they were talking like in, I guess it's, I don't know, maybe New Jersey or something, where they're saying they're not going to have lifeguards, so don't go in the water. Right. It's not safe.
Right. Well, this article said it did prompt a rescue attempt by the lifeguards, where he told lifeguards to go get his son. So somebody was on duty.
I have been in that and picked up by a lifeguard boat before. And I did that when I was like 10. And I've had it a few times. I don't know if you guys have like fully felt the effect of that rip current, but that tide, but it's crazy. And unfortunately, you have to swim out into deeper water, which seems really scary and weird, because
counterintuitive.
It's pulling you into this. It feels like it's pulling you into this death, and you have to swim toward the death. If you try to swim against it, you burn yourself out. And I remember,
So, well, I was going to say, I heard that you're supposed to swim sideways with it, but
like perpendicular. Right.
But in that moment, who knows?
Oh, my God.
I remember the reason I remember super clearly, it happened a couple times. I used to go to Santa Monica and just go swim out into the ocean. When I was young, I was 10, I always body surfed and stuff like that. And my stepdad and I, when I was 10, 11, would a couple times a year during the summer just drive there and swim. He would swim out. I would swim out. And we got sucked up into it, and it was bad. And when you get sucked up into it, there's really not much you can do for anybody around you. You end up being 50 or 80 feet away from whoever you're in there with, but there's nothing you can do for them, and there's not much they can do for you. So we both just swam for our lives. And my stepdad like made it in to the shore, and I may have gone out. I may have had a lifeguard come get me, and then they swim out and they pick you up in a boat, which is kind of weird. But anyway,
they just grab you by your swim trunks and just pull you in.
They take that buoy orange thing that Hasselhoff dry humps.
Oh yeah, the torpedo.
That big swinging dick he straps to his when he runs in slow motion. It's that thing.
Be ready.
So, but the comedy is we, about the next weekend, we were at my grandparents' house and we're sitting outside having a barbecue. And it was my stepdad and me and my mom. And of course, I was like 10 and I was like, oh my God, what a crazy story. This riptide hits, it's pulling us out. John, my stepdad's like, John's swimming for his life. I'm swimming for my life. John's ahead of me. John makes it in. John's safe. He's safe on the beach. I get sucked out to whatever. And at some point in the evening, John like pulled me aside and he went, could you stop telling that story? Because it sort of sounds like we went into the ocean and then I swam for my life and left you out in the middle of the ocean. And I'm like,
it was a force majeure situation.
I'm like, well, it is kind of how it went down, but I do get it makes you sound like a really bad stepdad that you just every man for themselves.
That's crazy. Gina, I'm looking here on the CNN article. They went swimming in Marina del Rey and the body washed up in Venice, which is obviously right next door. I've swam on that beach 100 times. When I say 100, it could have been 200. I never thought of it as like a dangerous beach. You know, it's just this very pleasant, wide open. Crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't think about this ever in California. The only times it ever happened to me was once in Greece and once in Costa Rica. And you think to yourself in that moment, well, I've had a good run and this is how it ends. And there's no coming back from this. So this is, to think that it happened right down the street is very, very odd.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, sad.
Well, moving forward, Harvey Weinstein won't be returning to L.A. anytime soon.
Do you guys must remember, do you remember conversations when you were a kid with an adult where they kind of said something and you were like, oh, I'm a kid, but I understand, like, I get what that sounds like now. Like when my stepdad said, please stop telling that story about me abandoning you in the ocean. I was a kid, but for a moment I was like, oh, I get it. Like I understood what he was saying and how bad that would sound. It's always weird and embarrassing, those kind of weird kid stories I probably had. Can we all remember five of those from our life where something was done and it dawns on you and real quick, like, and you think it's funny and then you're in trouble or it's weird.
You feel so ashamed.
Absolutely.
Sometimes.
Yeah. And a lot of times like older relatives, I don't know if this is an Asian thing or not, and older parents and stuff, they would talk about their kid who is like 10, 13, who has a sense of what's going on. They would talk about their kid as if they're not even there. They're like, oh, so, Jimmy's starting to get glasses this year, huh? So the girls aren't really going to like that. And I'm like, I'm right here, dude.
I was making fun of these two kids who I was friends with because we used to bust each other's balls. I was basically calling them stupid or talking about how dumb they were. And my parents were like, Brian, stop. And I realized like, oh, I'm talking in front of their parents. Like, this is not polite. Yeah, because it was just joking, but I was like, oh, that's probably very insulting to them.
Yeah. We've all had
those. I was 11. I was 12 or whatever I was. Yeah.
Max Pata, write that down. I'd like to hear those weird stories. Some of them take a bizarre turn for the sexual, sadly. But I do, because I remember, here's another one. When I was about 9, 10, probably about the same age, my dad lived in a small apartment in North Hollywood off of Laurel Canyon, sort of off of Oxnard back. It's like a one bedroom. And, you know, I'd stay at my mom's house 3 days a week and his apartment like 4 days a week, like go back and forth. And like he had a little bedroom in the back. And one night I was sleeping over and all night, I just heard this woman in the next unit, you know, paper thin walls. We shared a whole wall with somebody, the whole length of the apartment. And all night was just this chick like, some guy was just pounding the shit out of her for 7 hours. And then, like, I woke up a thousand times. And it's like, And the next day, I just went in and I said to my dad, I said, the woman next door, she's in agony. She's sick. She's so sick. She's hurt. We should call an ambulance.
And check on her.
And my dad kind of gave, like, the second his tone changed, like, he went, son, she was having, and I was like, oh my God, she was getting fucked. Like, I kind of was half in between knowing and not knowing, but I knew in a second, as soon as he looked at me, I was like, oh, and then this is going to be this weird conversation with my fucking celibate dad in a shitty apartment about getting fucked all night. But,
yeah,
thanks, Dad. Thanks, Dad. Yeah, I was about 10, Dad, I think, back in the day.
You mean your dad, the passionate swimmer and surfer who loves the beach?
Stepdad was the one who abandoned me to let me be claimed by Neptune.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Those are the weird sort of adult kid conversations where in the middle of the conversation, you become an adult. I was a kid at the beginning, like, oh, this poor lady's groaning in pain. And we're like, when a man and a woman are in love, I was like in the middle. I was like, oh, fuck.
So eject.
So your dad actually did give you the birds and the bees and all that stuff?
I think that was as far as it went.
It was like my family didn't give birds and bees, and they didn't burn calories on their kids, either giving them advice or saving them from a certain death at a maritime disaster, but they were exceedingly honest. They were like honest atheists. So it's like if you would have said to them, hey, this chick's, you know, I'd say to my kid, yeah, she's probably okay, stomach flu, and I'd go to the next room, you know. But my family just like, well, here's what was going on. Like, very matter-of-factly.
I never got that. And I told you guys before, I learned any sex stuff when I was 13 years old from you and Drew on Loveline.
Oh,
and
I don't know.
Only years later, I confronted my dad. I was like, Dad, how come we never talked about it? And like, even when I went to college, all the other kids got condoms, you know, and you never gave me anything. And they just looked at me as like, you? Condoms? Come on.
Right. Yeah, those things have an expiration date. You can only carry them in your wallet till you're junior before you have to throw them out and get a new one.
He sized you up.
Yeah.
Not actually physically, obviously.
Not actually. But the tape.
All right, let me hit J.B. Weld, and then we'll continue on with the news. J.B. Weld, I love this stuff, man, for small or big projects around the home or garage, ordinary household glue. Well, it's ordinary. It's got the word ordinary in it. You need something strong. You need a better choice. We're proud to have J.B. Weld as a sponsor. They're great. I know these guys. I met them at SEMA. I went to their booth. I love all this stuff. I love the epoxies. I like the super glue. I like the single stage stuff. J.B. Weld, if you're working on stuff around your house and you need professional grade, go with J.B. Weld. They've been around for 50 years, metal, wood, plastic, and more. Don't glue it. JB Weld it. It's available at jbweld.com. Home Depot, Lowe's, AutoZone, Advanced Auto Parts, O'Reilly, Walmart, Amazon, Michaels, and more. Again, get some of this stuff and fix your own stuff. You don't want that stinky repair guy in your house. You fix it yourself with JB Weld. All right, Gina, what else we got?
Well, let's just tie up this Harvey Weinstein situation. Oh, yeah. He's been awaiting extradition to face his 5 charges of rape and sexual assault in L.A. Ooh. So he's already dealing with New York. He's actually still in Wendy Correctional Facility near Buffalo. So the process started in early March, but the lockdown delayed things, like it delayed everything. And according to Variety, the county district attorney's office still hasn't filed this extradition request with the authorities in New York. So he's cooling his heels with his 23-year sentence. And most of LA's courtrooms have been closed the last few months, but they're expected to reopen on June 10th, which sucks because I just got a jury summon for June 10th. Oh. And hearings will resume on June 22nd.
Wow.
I might be gone for 1 to 10 days.
Yeah. How's Rose McGowan doing these days? I feel like she is
probably angry,
inspiring and insane sort of simultaneously. Mm.
Well, she's consistent.
She's very consistent.
Because remember when she kind of went after Alyssa Milano.
Right.
Is Weinstein getting like booty fucked in prison, or is he like, okay? Like, is he like, you know what I mean? Like it's very heinous crimes, but it's not underage. Like, you know, or do people was like, yo, I love Gangs of New York. Great movie, man, that you produced. How does that,
love
how
Shakespeare
does his
love.
Prison?
Shakespeare in love.
That's the talk of the prison. How does his prison life work? I always wonder.
I don't know.
If he's going the Cosby route, he's in basically isolation only to come out on Sundays to give his sermon to hundreds of inmates. I don't know that Harvey's doing that.
Yeah. Also, this is why, look, I know this sounds harsh, but if you're going to get thrown in for rape or molestation or whatever, on the way in, you got to shoot a cop. Don't kill him, but you have to shoot a cop, because when everyone finds out why you got into prison, and then you have to spend a long time with a bunch of people who somehow find out everything. This world, by the way, whether it's the FBI or prisons, what happened to mum's the word? Like, how come everyone finds everything out now? Like, you talk to anyone who goes to prison and you go, oh, they know who all the pedophiles are. And you go, why? Do they have access to the records? Like, you're in a fucking cage. Why do you find it? They find out everything. And the what chomos. Else? Oh, they got drugs. They all got phones. They got mistresses. They have RVs. Most of them have been to the Grand Canyon during their sentence. It's like, what? Why do you get to do everything? It's a prison. It's a fucking box with a cage around it. Why do you get all, why do you have access to all what the warden knows? Oh, believe me, they know. They find out. Why? How does it work?
How?
How do you know? Why do you know every, like, if you're a guard and a guy gets brought in and another prisoner goes, what's he in for? Can you just say none of your GD business? Or do you have to tell him what the guy's in for? Or is there a special pedophile prison bus that's, you know, painted brown or something that everyone knows? Like, why do we know?
Actually, yes.
There
yes,
is?
For child molesters, there's a lot of times, isn't there, they're segregated because they know that they're targets.
I would, that's,
so they,
again.
They wear a different color jumpsuit.
Flesh wound, but you got to shoot a cop.
Yeah.
You have to, because then you'll be a hero. You want to be a hero for 18 years, or do you want to fucking run for your life with your hands over your ass?
How did you get in here? Shot a cop. On the way.
When we went to Rarotonga in the Cook Islands like 6 years ago, everyone wanted to do something different. It's a very small island. Went to rugby matches, did all this stuff. I begged my friends to take a tour of the prison. I wanted to see this prison more than anything in the world. So we went to the prison on Rarotonga, and we got there at like noon. And I said to the prison guard, like, can we take a tour? And he said, yeah. And I go, where is everyone? And he said, they went home for lunch.
Mm.
So wow. Different strokes for different folks, but apparently that, you know, you're on the honor system because they all come back after lunch.
Yeah. Wow. They can get whatever drugs they want. A lot of them get hold of cell phones, and they seem to have dossiers on every other prisoner. And if you think about it, why is that? Why does it need to be? And the answer is, I'll tell you what the answer is. Prison guards are closer to prisoners than they are to the people who live in their house when they leave the prison. A lot of prison guards got a lot of prisoner in them, potential prisoner in them. Because it's, oh, look, you have to bribe the guard. The you can't get drugs into a prison. The only way to get stuff in or to get stuff done or to get information is the guards. They have to. It's like whatever the drug cartels do in Mexico. Like, if you can't find a cop to pay, you're out of business. Security guards, prison
underground
guards.
Economy.
Yeah, yeah. But why? Why do we need all that? Why? How? Why do the guards need to know the information? Like, why does everyone know what everyone did? Anyway, shoot a cop. Take my advice. Flesh wound. I'm not a weirdo. Not a weirdo. It's a through and through. You know what I mean? Like the meaty part of the thigh. But either way, just don't go in with the pedophile rap. That's all. Sorry. This makes sense.
It's just solid horse sense. So
I'm just telling you what my grandfather told me all those years ago. That's not making this up.
Good looking out for the pedophiles, Ace.
That's right. Thanks.
So singer Sia, she generally doesn't seem to like a lot of fanfare. She always wears big wigs, big things over her face, not very much known about her. And that includes some changes in her personal life, which I found a little bit interesting. On a recent interview with SiriusXM Morning Mashup, she was asked about a recent adoption, and she confirmed the story, but it's not your typical adoption story. Here's the clip.
Sia, you adopted a son, didn't you?
I did. I actually adopted two sons. Last year, they're both 18, they were 18, they're both 19 years old now.
Okay.
They were aging out of the foster care system, and I love them.
So she adopted two 18-year-old boys who were about to turn 19 and be booted out of foster care, and you don't hear that story ever.
I aged out of my dad's garage in North Hollywood when I turned 19. So the thing about aging out is you're supposed to move the fuck out of wherever you were. I don't know. I think Sia, I know it's been said many times, but Sia is she's an enabler. She is. I know. We've all seen the bumper stickers.
That old chestnut.
Yeah, but Sia's being an enabler. She is. She's taking people who need to go out, get a job, and fight to keep it, and bringing them into her palatial estate with her giant wigs and bows.
She's Mr. Drummond of our new era.
Yeah,
with Willis and Arnold.
I do like that notion of, I feel bad for the 15 or the 16-year-old who's like in the system who nobody is going to adopt because they'll
it's like the, it's like the seeing your dog at the pound. You know what I mean?
Right.
You got to adopt the seniors.
Yep. But it's the middle-aged ones that don't get any attention, the 5 or 6-year-old dogs, because you either want a puppy or you feel bad for the old dogs. And
right.
And the in-betweeners gets no love.
But
hi, I'm Jimmy Yo-Yang for middle-aged dogs.
You guys, Jimmy, think about a PSA for middle-aged dogs. Like, I feel like you've got some juice in this town. Here's the thing. The reason they age out of the system is because the state deemed it appropriate that when you turn 18, you must then go leave the nest and get a job or leave the facility and be on your own. So they're not really kicking them out prematurely. They figured out that it's safe. I still like her, and I like where her head's at.
I can't say but think of your situation, because frankly, your situation was fairly comparable to this. But these kids, presumably don't have any family of any kind, and nobody looking out for them. And they're 18, but in I don't know anything about them, but they might still be kind of kids. And to have someone be like, come on, I will be, I will look after you. I will make sure you get on your feet. Then, there's something sort of commendable about that.
But Gina, doesn't it also send a dangerous message? So let's say I'm the instructor, I'm the counselor, I'm the teacher, and I got some 17-and-a-half-year-old kids in the system. And I'm saying to them, hey, you need to focus, you need to study, you need to work on some life skills. And they go, why should I, Pops? Trisha Yearwood is going to adopt me in a couple of months, or whomever. you know, Bette Midler.
I mean, Faith Hill.
Faith Hill. Yeah, like, what do I, you know,
sure,
what I mean?
It's Shia Twain.
A false sense of security. I mean, it's a dangerous message. It's a dangerous message.
Yeah, it's a slippery slope. Yeah. You're absolutely right.
Right. It could be Faith Hill.
Could be Tony Loveless.
That's right. That's what I'm saying.
Boy. Sorry. Any female country star of the mid-90s.
That's right.
Joe D. Messina.
That's right.
Bonnie Raitt.
Crystal Gayle. Who knows? The point is I don't have to study because of this.
You're right.
And many of them, maybe the lion's share of them won't be adopted by country stars.
Maybe. That,
many. Most. I don't know. I don't have the numbers in front of me. But then what?
That's what
I'm saying.
You're right.
All right.
Yeah. No, thank you for making that point clear. I appreciate it.
Someone had to say.
You're absolutely right. So we talked a little bit earlier about Mike Tyson and what's going on with him and the cross between celebrity and fighting and branding. Mm-hmm. And I have an example of that. I've never seen the show. So Brian, you might have to help me pronounce this name. Joe Giudice? Giudice?
Oh, I have no idea, but I think it's pronounced Giudice or Giudice.
Is it? Thank you.
Giudice. No. Giudice.
Is that it?
It is.
Oh, yeah. That's tough. They do the Italian Jew Giudice. Yeah, he's in Italy.
Teresa.
Right. The desperate housewife of Long Island or whatever. This is the husband who went to jail, I think, for tax fraud or something.
Yeah, and then got deported.
Oh, he looks like Mike the Situation.
No, that is Mike the Situation.
Oh, it is. It's the same guy?
No.
That was just that random picture.
They both kind of do look situational.
Yeah, he got that sort of... Adam,
look
you described
at the top
it,
right corner.
It looks like a kid from the 30s.
He got the same hairline, though, like... Really hang on to that slick back hairline.
Yeah, he's a, you know, the whole thing about that sort of Italian, the Goomba from Italia kind of thing, it doesn't really last in California. It kind of washes off you pretty quick. You know, mm-hmm. I'm Italian. I come from an Italian family. Nobody cares. My wife's Italian. Nobody cares. There's no Little Italy. That's how little we care about Italians in Los Angeles, but if you're back east, you're Long Island, or these guys are, it stays with you for a long time. It's funny here; you just kind of you molt, you shed your Italian skin, and
it's a lifestyle.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Everyone thought you were Jewish, and you didn't correct them.
Yeah, right. Jimmy O. Yang with your Chinatown here.
You got it all.
You guys your move Chinatown. In 10 minutes later, got your own goddamn town. I'm asking for a little slice of a street that has the word little in front of it. You guys go town. I just went little Italy. No, too much.
But Chinatown's always in a neighborhood or next to something super hood. Like it's right always next to the Martin Luther King Boulevard. And it's not great. Like L.A. has a Chinatown, but it's really shitty and like smells like dead chicken.
Well, that's your guys' fault. We would keep,
who's
little
Chinatown.
We would keep, who's running it? The Greeks?
Yeah, who set this up? Did somebody give us this land? Be like, hey, this is Chinatown. Did we decide to set up this Chinatown, this shitty neighborhood? That's just poor planning.
I'm telling you, if we could carve out a little Italy, we would do a fantastic job of running that place. You could eat off the streets. That much I know. And we wouldn't hang weird things in the windows. That's for damn sure. Sorry. I like, it is insane that Los Angeles has, like, we have a Filipino burg.
Historic Filipino. There's a little Bangladesh now, which is like four blocks, I think.
Where? Near Little Ethiopia?
No, like in K-Town. It's weird. Like,
Ethiopia. Every town should just do it like New York. You got Chinatown and Little Italy. They're right next to each other. I used to go out. We used to go out there with Jimmy all the time. Not Jimmy O, but Jimmy K. Good Jimmy. And we'd go over there and we'd eat Chinese food and then go get gelato, like up the street at the Little Italy. Like it was cool. Yeah.
It's very local, but you know what they should just do? They should just name the corner of Melrose and Highland where the Mozza complex is, you know, the pizzeria, Mozza, and they got Chispacca, the steakhouse. They just make that the de facto Little Italy.
Yeah.
Put up a sign.
Yeah. We'd have to go across the street to the Jiffy Lube and tell all the Mexicans, right. Hey, look, we need you to put on these Italian flag hats.
That's a long story.
If you guys grease your hair back a little and get a guma, you could probably pass.
At least put down some checkered tablecloths.
That's right. Let me light a candle that's in a wine bottle. Yes. Sir.
Certain towns are proudly proclaimed, like, okay, we're claiming this as Chinatown, or like, finally, we got a little Bangladesh. But some of it feels derogatory. Like, some people call Glendale like Little Armenia. And it's like, oh, am I supposed to say that in front of an Armenian person? Or is that like insulting? So there's a weird balance between the two.
Yeah.
Glendale used to be all Irish.
Glendale is like, yeah, Little Armenia. And then also, The Hebrew Heights, I always say Studio City Hills was called Hebrew Heights when I was in high school.
But that's awesome.
It's all the Jews lived up in the hills, funny. And that's why they called it Hebrew Heights.
There is a Little Armenia, and that is Little Armenia, Jimmy.
It is officially Little Armenia.
I Googled it. Yeah, it's on the Google map as Little Armenia.
Oh, okay.
Well, so there's two Little Armenia?
You racist piece of shit.
I didn't want to be racist, and now I'm a racist.
Little Armenia is like sunset in Normandy. Literally, there's a sign.
You know, yeah. I got to tell you, from what I've gathered from Armenian guys, Sean, who works in my back of my shop's Armenian, Gergos, who I talk to all the time, those guys work together. Like, they're a tight-knit group. They find other, they all know some Armenian guy who can do, who can take care of whatever it is. I mean, those guys are like, we don't give them their due or their credit for I know a guy. Like, if you go, my car's got no catalytic converter, I can't get a smog today. Talk to Armenia. I know a guy. Yeah, he'll take care of you. He'll take care of you. It's funny because there's a blue collar version of I know a guy, and there's the Mark Garagos kind of white collar version of I know a guy, but they're both guys who Armenians know. And I never really thought about it, but you got to suck up to the Armenians, man, because they get it done.
So that's Little Armenia.
Yeah.
So that's Glendale like will be big like Armenia.
Yeah, that's right. Big Armenia. That's right. Sorry. What else we got, Gina Gray?
Well, I think we brought this up, maybe last month, but there's been a new development. The pair of autographed game-worn Nike Air Jordan 1 sneakers from 1985 did sell at auction, making them the most expensive sneakers ever sold. I don't know if you saw the story, but if you'd like to take a guess on what they ended up selling for, they eclipsed the last record, which was the Nike Moon shoe. And I'm not going to tell you that price either.
Well, ooh. All right. I'll play the role of my mom. First off, how many shoes can you wear at once? Can you wear three pair of shoes? Who needs? When were they? $100,000? $200,000? Do you know how many special needs school teachers you could hire for the amount of money that you spent for these shoes? And by the way, to play what? Basketball, where they just take the big tall guys and they just stand there and they hand them the ball and they just drop it into the hoop because they're so tall. The average teacher of a school, LA Unified School, she makes $1,800 every 2 years. That's the average. And they have to buy all the supplies. They have to do repairs. They have to repair the roofs. When the air conditioning goes down, the teachers must be HVAC technicians. They have to fight. They're physically. I heard my friend Ruth was stabbed by a student and they said she had to finish out the day. Literally bleeding. $10 a year they pay these people. And does Michael Jordan have enough money? How much money does one person need? You can't spend all that money. Who needs more than one? Sorry, go ahead.
I think I hear my scones burning. Yes. I got to get out of here.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Go ahead.
So I'm going to go. Anyone care to take a guess?
Well, did it sold recently with the Last Dance movie? Because that had to tack on a few ducats, right?
That was a great detail.
Anyway, I believe that is the most viewed thing on ESPN, or like 5.5 million views. Yeah.
Game worn, original. These are original. All right. I'm going to say $410,000.
Okay.
Ooh.
I'll go just a little lower at $350,000.
Okay. I was going to go with $250,000, so I'm going to say $1.
Adam is the closest without going over, $560,000.
Wow.
So they are now the most expensive sneakers ever sold. The second most expensive sneakers now are the Moon Shoe, Nike Moon Shoe, $437,500.
That was a great detail in that in the Last Dance when Jordan wore the original shoes in his last game at MSG, and they were so uncomfortable because shoe technology had gotten so much better in 10 years or whatever, or 13 years, that his feet were all bloody and all chafed.
Yeah, and he still scored like 50. It just shows your shoes do not matter whatsoever.
I loved it, and I always loved the theme. And the one thing you never saw, because it's probably never happened, like you watch, it was a great series, it was fun to watch, but they'd go, well, he had this young rookie was guarding him in the first half and held him to 7 points. And when they were walking to the locker room, he said to Jordan, nice try, but no cigar. And then the second half started and Jordan was scoreless. It's like that never happened. It's like
the worst game of his career.
Every story was they poked that bear and he always came back and made everyone pay for it. And that's all he needed.
Incredible.
You want to bring it home, Gina Grad?
I sure will. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news. Gina
Grad. That was the news with Gina Grad.
Scott's Turf Builder, last but not least. You want to thicken your lawn a little bit, thicken it, and get it a little greener, a little better looking. I got the answer for that embarrassing, thin, sparse lawn. You're the laughing stock of the neighborhood. Well, no more. You got Scott's Turf Builder. It's a thicker lawn. You turn your lawn into a thick green paradise. It's a 3-in-1 solution. Seeds and fill, fills in the gaps, and it's a soil improver as well. And it's good for root development. And fertilizer to feed the new grass, thickens the existing as well. You want that beautiful green lawn. You guys are home. People are supposed to get a little sunshine, but you're not supposed to stray too far. How about you take care of your lawn? Get it up and running, man. Something good from the pandemic. Up to 50% thicker in just one application. And finally, thick green lawn you've always dreamt of. No quibble, money back guarantee. So if you're not satisfied, get your money back. Get a thicker, quicker at Scott's. This is Scott's Yard. Hey, I want to thank Gene Bean Baxter for coming on from K-Rock. Jimmy O. Yang, Good Deal, is a very funny stand-up special. And like I said, don't believe me? Find some of the comedians you've liked. Go check the IMDb score and just see how well Jimmy's rates against theirs.
Thank you.
You'll understand how good it is. And it's available now on Prime Video on Amazon. Netflix, of course, show Space Force. We'll be watching that starting May 29th. My book is coming out. I'm Your Emotional Support Animal. That'll be out on the 16th. You can pre-order it now. It just helps if you go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble or wherever. And we got my stand-up up on YouTube, youtube.com/Adam Carolla as well. And until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Gene Baxter and Jimmy O. Yang and Gina Grad and Paul Bryan saying mahalo.
Stick around. Adam Carolla returns with Dave Damashek for Good Sports right after this.
The Podcast One Sports Network presents Good Sports.
Hi and hello, sports fans. Welcome to the Thursday episode of Good Sports. Adam Carolla over there readying himself to head off to Houston, Texas. Dave Damashek in my cave ready to chop it up. All the hot sports talk coming your way in a bite-sized sample for you. Ace, how are you? Where we left off yesterday, you hit on some interesting changes in the 21st century for the sports fan. Ode to the uniforms. This is what we root for. Superman doesn't unveil a new set of colors and a new logo every 4 or 5 years. That's why he's resonated through the decades.
Yeah.
Football teams and otherwise change. I mean, if you're the Oregon Ducks, you change literally every week of the season. How's anybody supposed to sink their teeth into what you've got going down? The final pro football uniform, and six of them, if I'm not mistaken, have updated or changed their get-ups, punctuated now. Both teams in L.A. changed their uniforms. The Chargers, glowing reviews. The L.A. Rams, here it comes now. Longtime L.A. Rams fan, Ace Carolla, lay it on us. How do you feel about these new get-ups?
I'll tell you what I think. First thing, you're right. A uniform, it's like a logo. What if Coca-Cola or Ford changed up their logo every 3 years? I don't like it. I like the consistency of it. Okay. They're the Rams. You're never going to go wrong with it. Here's one thing that I don't like about uniforms or architecture or interior design or women's hairstyles. We shouldn't be able to put a date on it. You shouldn't go 50 years from now. You shouldn't look at this and go, oh, yeah, I know when they did that. You know what I'm saying? They should
Absolutely.
Be evergreen. Yes. And we are kind of putting a date stamp on this. Also, when it comes to socks, I like socks being socks. I don't like it when they become stockings. And when you take your socks and you make them the same color as your pants, you essentially look like French nobility from 1721. You know, it gives a your shoes should have buckles on them at this point. So
I agree that I think you're exactly right. First of all, about the socks, when you blend that, I don't know why that became a virtue. Like everybody looked at the Baltimore Ravens because they're the first ones to do it. They wore the satin black pants without stripes on them into the black socks, and then it kind of looks like you're wearing jazzercise pants.
Yeah.
You know, like those men's ballet pants. And is that really the message you want to send? Why? I mean, in an age of HD, with all the little nuance of like with it, look closely at the numbers and you'll see that there's a thread in there. That signifies the long history in Southern California to Capistrano. What are you talking about? Uniforms don't need a backstory. Like there are literally stories floating around the last week about to really understand the Rams uniforms, you have to understand the thoughts behind. No, I don't. Do they look good when I'm watching? I don't. This is a uniform. This is not a novella that requires me to deep dive and research why those things are the way they are. That's bad. Why can't you have the cool striped socks? I mean, we're in HD. Those will pop through on our TVs. Why are they all solid like that? Continue now.
I feel like it's a fine line between a sock and a stocking. But if you get too thin and you make them the same color as the pants, you're now up against the border of stockings versus socks.
That's what you got to call it. Just call them hosiery.
Yes.
That'll take people. That if we refer to them as hosiery, then I suspect teams will stop doing it. Where are you, by the way? Quick side note. In the last 10 to 20 years, all Major League Baseball teams, I believe, have abandoned the proper stirrup for the like sewn on the fake stirrup thing. And at which point it'll stun you to learn as a fashionista, as I am, Ace, that the most important part of my Little League experience was properly wearing the stirrup. Some of my friends would be like, I remember my friend David Gefsky, his would slouch down around his ankles. And I would say, what are you doing, man? This isn't your right. This is a gift that you've been given to wear to wear the stirrups and put them on right. In hindsight though, kind of weird. Why did you have to wear two pairs of socks? One of which was not a sock at all. It was like a giant sock with two holes in it.
It didn't offer any protection.
No.
For a while, if you wanted to be cool, you would cut the bottom of the stirrup and you would sew a piece of nylon on there or elastic on there, and then you could pull it up and get a higher stirrup. I don't know who the first major leaguer to pull it up higher was. Maybe Bake McBride.
I think that's a good call. That's a good call.
I feel like maybe somebody from the Expos or something like that. I don't know.
I feel like Gary Templeton of the Padres and Cardinals. I think he wore really high. It's very strange. I know. As we've discussed, I had a weird childhood. I don't know why I was obsessed by that. I never liked the guys who wore them down low, as I say. I always admired those who knew how to pull them up.
But here,
good and high.
But
Jim Rice had good. Jim Rice wore them up nice and high. That's why I liked him.
I feel the same way. We talked the other week about Joe Willie Namath and the white Rydell cleats and what a huge difference that made to me. I was the same way. I had the same obsessions. But here's the real question. When the stirrup gets so high that the loop at the top of the stirrup is no longer visible, where do we come down on that? Do we like the pant going all the way past the stirrup so it just looks like two racing stripes going up the side of your ankles?
It looks weird, but that's because of a lifetime of almost zero pitchers ever exposing that. It's weird that there's something about the position you play and how it dictated. I mean, the kids, anybody under 25 has no idea what we're talking about right now, because they're just used to seeing the ones that are literally like it's a white sock with fake stripes on them. But I used to like, what was his name? Toby Hara? Was that his name? Who had his, like, you could fully see the stirrup, and I thought that was cool.
Well, all right, let's figure out the number one position that would justify wearing the high sock where you couldn't even see the top of the loop and the lowest position.
What kind of life is this? But
I'm going to eliminate pitcher and catcher. Let's eliminate
pitcher
and catcher.
They don't do it. I don't know why. It shows weakness for some reason to be out on the hump with your stirrup exposed.
I say the lowest out of those players is third base. That guy wears it the lowest.
Yes.
And the highest is probably center field. It's a speedster type move.
You know, that's a great, you know what? You're right, because now that I'm thinking about it, I think the guys who wore them up real high were, I think, like Vince Coleman, the speedster for the Cardinals in the mid-80s, who ironically, and one of the more underreported things that ever happened in our lives in sports was, in the World Series, the fastest guy in baseball, the entire St. Louis Cardinals team predicated on getting on base and then stealing bases to get runners in scoring position, that guy got rolled over by the automatic tarp thing during batting practice. It hit on his leg and it took his speed away, and they lost that World Series. Do you remember when that happened?
I do remember that story.
It didn't crush his leg or anything, but it I don't remember how severe it was, but it was like, well, is Vince Coleman going to be able to play? Like, wait, that slow thing that rolls the tarp out under the fake turf rolled over the fastest guy's leg. That's one of the great ironies of all time. Oh, and now Gary has provided us with a picture, and you are 100% right. Boy, those stirrups are nice and high.
They send
all the way to cloud nine.
What's weirder, the automatic tarp thing rolling over Vince Coleman, or famously the Patriots sending the convict out there with the snowblower to clean the thing? Like, in terms of automation in sports, what's a more bizarre? What would never happen again? Do you know what I mean?
I would say that the tarp thing is unlikely to happen again, but we don't celebrate the Patriots' long history. People think like, oh, Belichick with deflating the ball and videotape. Oh, no, that the Patriots' history extends way further back than that. Go back and look it up, everybody. 1981, 1982-ish, thereabouts, before barefooted Tony Franklin made the scene. John Smith, the left-footed kicker for those Patriots, in the waning moments in Foxborough against, of all teams, the Miami Dolphins, up from Florida to play. Snow-covered field. I think it was – I can't remember who the coach was. Ron Earhart, maybe. Orders the ex-con running the snowmobile to run over the spot and clear off the thing. And you see the Patriots all cheering for him. He makes a field goal. They win 3-0. It really is a marvelous moment in sports.
There's an interesting thing. And I remember once when I was playing Pop Warner football, and we're playing some team, And they had some like razzle dazzle moves, and they'd line up in these weird formations where they'd have the center would line up and then the whole team would line up to the right of the ball and all that kind of stuff. And I was captain of the defense, and I remember the coach just saying, look, instead of like trying to adjust and have everyone run around, just yell timeout. Just call timeout. Call a timeout. And then we'll know what they're doing. I said, okay, yeah, that makes sense. I felt like it's happened a few times in football where something was happening and the other team was standing there sort of deer in the headlights.
Yeah,
but
right.
What they needed to do is just call a timeout, right?
Yeah, just throw the worst member of the defensive unit in front of the plow. Be like, no, you don't go anywhere. Like Tiananmen Square.
Right.
You know, before Tiananmen Square, like, no, we're not. Yeah, I'm trying to think of who would have been the best of it. Jake Scott out there,
every,
or somebody.
Every time there's one of those situations where the game just kind of ends, everyone just starts running off the field, and the team that lost, who got jobbed by the snowblower, they have there's nothing to do. It's like, it's over, it happened, it's gone.
That is, people always do that. Like, what if Twitter had been around when? That would have been a great one. If like, hey, there's a snowmobile on the field, right? A snowplow on the field. Right now, that was happening. And why we have to investigate Pro Football's rule book. Are you allowed to, like, since they're doing that, could one of the defensive players or Bob Greasy from the sideline throw in a snowball at the guy, like to try and knock him off his mark? These are questions that we'll have to wait for another day, because we're going to wrap Good Sports here back with a Friday episode around the live Houston show. Until then, for Adam Carolla, Dave Damashek, Good Sports out.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. You can leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. Remember, you can watch this broadcast at youtube.com/Adam Carolla and pre-order Adam's new book, among other fun things to do and see at adamcarolla.com.